And welcome, everybody. This is Jack Baloogian, and we've got a wonderful guest with us today, and somebody who's going to be more than just a source of information for what's happening in the cloud. But I hate to say it, but we could probably get a little bit more, you know, philosophical in what is happening, especially in this extraordinary time. And with us, we have David Friend. He is the CEO and president of Wasabi. David, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, nice to be here.
You know, it's kind of odd always doing something in a very unique form, which is what this is. But I do like the personal nature of being able to have a panel where you and I can actually talk like this. But before we even get into what's happening and where we're going with cloud infrastructure, tell us a little bit about Wasabi. You know, here's your chance for a little infomercial about that wonderful company, and then we can go from there.
Sure. Yeah, no, Wasabi is hot cloud storage, object storage. Our product is designed to be plug compatible with Amazon S3. The difference is we're 1/5 the price and faster. And yeah, we're cloud storage experts. We really know our tech when it comes to cloud storage. It's the only thing we do. We don't have 200 other cloud products. And as the world migrates from on-prem storage to the cloud, we want to get as much of it as possible.
So. Well, That's a great segue right there. I think, you know what, to leap off right into where I want to go with all of this. Look, you know what, I have been obviously watching what's been happening, you know, from a distance. I've been looking at what's happening with technology, but of course, intimately, I'm using it, whether it be talking to my children with Zoom now, which I never did before, or going through virtual meetings and, you know, the old idea even of a handshake or trading in the pit environment back in the city is completely changed. And you're right in the heart of this change as it's taking place. You know, tell me a little bit about the feedback that you're getting from your customers, where you think everything is going, because it's really changing at such I hate to use the term, but internet speed. And as it changes, I'm sure you're changing with it, or your company is being as dynamic as possible, because I would think that the need for your service is just growing exponentially.
Yeah, I mean, everything is producing more and more data. We have a customer here in Boston called the Dana-Farber Research Cancer Center. And, you know, they say the genomic data is doubling every 7 months. You know, if you look at things like surveillance, just since we've been in business the last 4 years, surveillance cameras have gone from SD to HD to 4K. And now we're seeing 8K and 10K surveillance cameras so that, you know, you can take a picture of an entire city plaza and zoom right in and recognize individual faces and things of that sort. So every time you turn around, you know, you're just seeing this explosion of data. And, you know, so for us, the opportunity is limitless, you know, when you look at the projections for the amount of data being generated. So, you know, the key for us is to drive down cost because, you know, if your data storage is too expensive, it doesn't matter whether your device is producing all this data. If you can't afford to store it, you know, you've got some real problems. So we're driving, our whole mission is to drive down the cost of storage. We want storage to be so cheap that people don't even think about it. It's like a utility, like electricity. You have a plug in the wall, and I don't care whether you're storing data from a satellite or data from a telescope in Chile or genomics or the data coming from your thermostat, whatever it's coming from, it's just storage. And, you know, there are edge cases for super fast, and there are edge cases for, like, you know, dead storage that gets put on a tape and stuck in a box in a warehouse somewhere. But that big bulk in the middle, which is really fast, but maybe not blinding fast like local flash, but really fast like S3 style data and cheap. And our mission is just drive down that cost.
Yeah, David, when you and I talked and the first time, one of the things that we talked about, and I don't know if you remember, is the fact that in the next couple of years, there's going to be so much data produced. In fact, I think the numbers that I'm hearing is that there's going to be more data produced in these next couple of years than mankind has produced over the course of its entire existence. And we see the world going in a certain direction. Has the pandemic sped that up? All right. Are we seeing, you know, and I guess my question to you is Wasabi that much busier now with people working remotely? And is this something that is going to probably stick around and have some traction?
Yeah, our business has been setting records almost every week since the beginning of the pandemic. But I have two theories about it. One is that when people are sort of in a hunker down mentality, cost savings projects rise up in the stack. So, you know, people always have priorities, and sometimes that shiny new object, that new application you're going to build or whatever is at the top of the stack. But, you know, when you're working from home and everybody's trying to figure out how to survive, you know, those things kind of slide off the table, and cost savings, just plain old boring cost savings, rises to the top. And the other possibility is that, you know, just data storage is a must have. It's not a nice to have. And, you know, the when I go over to Mass General and get an MRI, the data still has to get stored somewhere. People still have to back up their computers. The telescope in Chile isn't going to shut itself off. So, you know, data storage is not going to disappear because everybody is suddenly, you know, their businesses are closed. So,
you know, that's actually a good point. I want to hit on that a little bit. You know, you mentioned something, and it struck me, because that's exactly how I would react. You know, when you're talking about cost containment, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to a cheaper solution. It's a good solution. It's a cheaper price. And that's one of the things that differentiates, I think, what Wasabi does from what others might be doing. You know, it's not like you're buying something at Walmart. You know what I mean? You're still going to Nordstrom's. But guess what? The price is a lot cheaper than the thing that you're paying that's right next to it. But just going back to it, you know, one of the things as a former board member when I was at the CME, we would argue about things that we understood ad nauseum. We would talk about the expansion of the pork belly pit. But then we would have somebody from technology come in and say, we need to spend $100 million on disaster recovery. We would all look at each other and say, I guess we need this, we need it, and we would spend the $100 million. You know, it seems that IT costs now have gone to the point where you can no longer do that as a board. Now you have to be very conscious of what your IT department is spending. And it seems to me that Wasabi is right on that nerve, especially as we're watching IT costs skyrocket across the board.
Well, you know, part of the cost is just the people to do it. And when I walk through some of the big data centers where we have Wasabi storage installed, every cage, somebody has had to come up with their own storage solution. So, you know, one guy's got racks full of HP servers. Another guy's got EMC. Another guy's got NetApp. And, you know, it's just like, why would you do that today? You know, it's just move the storage to the cloud and get out of that business. It doesn't add any value to your whatever your business proposition is. It's just like, why would I want to build my own electric generating plant? You know, there's a plug it in, you know, and that's the way I view storage. And that's why I think people should view storage, which is all you want to do is store your data. So there's somebody already doing it, and it's cheaper than you could ever possibly do it yourself, especially when you consider the man hours and the people and the aggravation and everything else. Focus on the things that make your business unique, you know, and don't try to reinvent something for the 18,000th time.
That is so wise to hear that. I mean, you know, only a CEO can talk like that, only because you've thought about that, because I know I've thought about that too. You know, do you reinvent the wheel? Do you go and do you buy something that's close, or do you just kind of, you buy it off the shelf, or do you bring in a partner? I mean, you're faced with all types of questions like that. Let's skip gears a little bit here. You know, you've watched a lot of change take place, as I have. You know, we've been fortunate enough to be around. We've watched a lot of things take place. You know, we've gone from rotary telephones all the way down to the smartphone. In your mind's eye, and you're a bit of a visionary, where are we going with the cloud and cloud storage over the course of, say, the next 5 years? And then I'm going to follow it up with another question for you, David, that's even more philosophical than that. But just, do you see a vision for where this is going? Do you see it all encompassing? Because what you just said is so very important. I mean, there used to be a time when these IT, when these CTOs were gurus, and they were looked upon as gurus, and that we built a moat around their divisions, and nobody dared cross that moat because we were afraid that something was going to happen to IT. Well, those days seem to be over, and everybody seems to be specializing in their own little thing here. But how do you see it?
Well, you know, I'm here in New England, and you know, New England is dotted with these old brick factories from the previous centuries. And there was a time when literally every one of these factories had had its own electric generating plant out back, because they shifted from water power or steam power to electric motors, and there was no grid, you know. So I think we're going to see the same thing going on with data centers. There's no particular reason why people should want to own and manage their own hardware. It's a specialty. The people who do it don't always do it well. And for the most part, it's not core to what the business does. You know, running hardware is not about medicine. It's not about genomics. It's not about running an oil refinery. You know, it's just, it's infrastructure. And I see the infrastructure moving to the cloud. And, you know, there are two models for that. One is what I'd call the bare metal model, where you say, look, the only thing I want from the cloud is I don't want to own all this junk anymore. Let somebody else worry about the racks and the power and the air conditioning and the dead disk drives and all that kind of stuff. So that's, but I want my software, because my software is what makes my business unique. So I can see that model. The other model is the Amazon model, which is, we're going to build you this walled garden. We've got 200 products. We've got databases, content delivery networks, AI, facial recognition, voice recognition, you name it. We've got it all. And we want you to use all those tools inside of our walled garden. And by the way, if you want to take your data out, we're going to charge you for that. So you're stuck there.
Well, it's funny, being from Chicago, I've often said that Amazon has got a lot of the same characteristics as the mob. You know what? They bring you in and they make sure that you're there forever and you're paying them forever. But anyway, I kid, of course, when I say that. Before I let you go, David, I guess this is the question that I love asking people, only especially smart people and people that have been around. There's got to be something that you have seen, whether it be at a trade show, whether it be displayed, whether it be somebody pitching you on something that has caught your imagination, something that might transform the world as we know it over the course of the next, say, 10 years. And, you know, all of us have seen something that just strikes our imagination in a way that sticks with us. Tell me something that you've seen over the course of these last few years where you're thinking to yourself, this is going to be something that nobody's talking about, all right? But in another few years, it will be on everybody's radar.
Well, I wrote a book recently with Tom Kalopoulos, who's a well-known sort of futurist, called The Bottomless Cloud. It's available on Amazon. And it addresses a world in which data is abundant as opposed to a scarce resource. So right now, you know, you and I are both old enough to remember when our IT directors would come charging down the hall and chastise us because our mailbox was over 200 megabytes.
That's right.
And that was the shortage mentality. And I think where we're moving to more in the future is like the R2-D2, you know, where he plugs into the battle station and all of a sudden all the blueprints, everything about the battle station is accessible through this data port. And I think that's more the mentality that I think we will be shifting to. So it's not just one thing. It's a whole mindset about data. And I was just doing just before our talk here this morning, I was just doing a webinar with some MIT folks. And one of the subjects that came up is all the regret that you hear about people who threw away data 5 or 10 years ago, thinking it wasn't worth saving. And now they're sitting here saying, wow, I sure wish I had that that old data that we tossed.
Yeah.
And, you know, so that was the shortage mentality. And I think in the future, as the cost of storing data continues to drop or head towards zero, it's not going to get to zero, but it's getting cheaper and cheaper. People are not going to think like that anymore. They're going to say, let's keep everything, because what we've learned is that we regret having thrown away the stuff that we already threw away. So let's not make that mistake again.
You know, one thing that I think people have probably taken out of your book is the fact that there seems to be a structural societal change that's taking place simultaneously. And I guess, you know, that was the one thing that I kind of drew a little bit from our talk before. Talk to me a little bit about that, only because, you know, I love ending with a little philosophy. I guess the Jesuits taught me well at Loyola, so I've got to make sure that I have a little philosophy in every one of my talks. But give me a little bit of that. Do you see a structural change in society? I think we see it right now with the pandemic and, of course, the way we're communicating. But more than that, it's technology that's enabling all of this. How do you see it?
Well, you know, for better or worse, people expect everything to be available at their fingertips. You know, if I want to find out some information about a painting that I just saw in an art gallery, I expect to be able to go home and read all about it. And certainly that was not the case when I was growing up. So people who are growing up today in an information-rich society have a very different view on, you know, what constitutes information and education. And so I think that, you know, sometimes it's hard for me to relate to my kids because, you know, I ask, you know, if I want to know something, I call my son-in-law and he looks it up on Google. Because, you know, it's just, that's not the way I grew up. But that's a very different mindset. And, you know, the dark side of that, of course, is disinformation.
Yeah.
And, you know, and this is something which Twitter and Facebook and Google and all the others are struggling with, which is, you know, now we have suddenly changed the whole world's expectations about the availability of information. And sure as shooting, you know, there are people out there who have decided to put this to dark purposes.
Yeah. David, I can't think of a better place to stop than right there. It is an absolute pleasure talking to you. And hopefully everybody enjoyed this. This was something that I absolutely enjoyed. Again, David Friend, the president and CEO of Wasabi. Thanks very much, David.
Pleasure.